Serena Freitas. And you know that Serena, who, by the way, doesn't normally dress like this, but you'll hear more about that this morning, has just come back from almost a month in Egypt. And we prayed for her before she went, and I wanted her to have the opportunity, which she had in the first service as well this morning, to just share about this incredible trip, mission trip that she was on. So give her a warm welcome.
Right, we good? Okay, awesome. All right, so yes, I went to Egypt, and this has been a long time coming. Before I left, I explained that when I was 4 years old, God really put it on my heart that I was going to go to Egypt and work in an orphanage. And I'm 25 now, so he works a lot slower than I was expecting, and a lot faster in some ways, because he gave me about a month's notice that I was going on this trip. So I was in Egypt from June 18th to July 11th, so like 27, 28 days, something like that, with travel time. And I went with an organization called Coptic Orphans. There's a woman in Egypt, or that was born in Egypt. She moved to America, and she's really just moved by the plight of the kids that are still left there. And so she created an organization. It was very small at first. You know, she was just helping one kid here, and then they were supported enough by the Coptic community here in the United States and in Canada and Great Britain and also Australia that they were able to start making more headway. So at our location, we actually had about 1,000 kids just attend our three-week program. And there was four sites, so a lot of kids. And those are just the kids that were in the program for this session. They're running three sessions a year now. And each of those kids actually gets a visit from a representative each week. So it's doing amazing things for the community. I found out about it on Google. Thank you, Google. So as you can see, I did a lot of very safe things in Egypt. I'm really glad that the pictures didn't post till after I got back, because my grandparents would have been a little freaked out. You can do the next one. A lot of people are asking, what does Coptic mean? Had anyone heard of Coptic before I mentioned I was going on this trip? Okay, yeah, that's about right. Coptic is actually a combination of a Greek and an ancient Egyptian word that actually is the word for Memphis, which is the first capital of Egypt. It's now Cairo, because that's like the Muslim one. Memphis was the pagan one for the Egyptian deities. It can refer to the Coptic language, which is kind of like a cross between Greek and hieroglyphics, which is awesome. Can't read it worth beans, but it's really cool looking. And also it refers to just people from Egypt. So means those two things. And then to further confuse the issue, it also refers to a specific brand of Christianity called the Coptic Church, founded in Alexandria by St. Mark, who wrote the Book of Mark. During the first century. So it happened very quickly, like right after Jesus, ascended and went back to heaven. It's 19 centuries old. Very Orthodox, makes the Catholic Church look very like up and coming and contemporary. They actually created the Nicene Creed, which I was a wee bit ignorant. So I was like, what, you know about that? They're like, yeah, dude, our Pope wrote it. I was like, whoops, my bad. So Coptic Church. The picture is actually our priest, who's called Abuna. It's like a word for father. And then Aheb, who was our coordinator, is on the right there. They're actually standing on a site called Ensena, which is a mountain that was formed out of the rubble from a Christian community and the bones of the martyrs. So we were actually like walking around and you can like pick up bones off the ground. So I forgot to mention that in the first service, but yeah, it was a very impactful trip. Next one. People asked, how did traveling go over there? And if you were on my Facebook page, you got a delightful little video that I posted at about 11 o'clock at night when I got there crying in my hotel room. So if you do the first picture, this is me on the way to the airport. I'm happy, I'm hopeful, I have dreams, it's great. And if I'd only known, the next picture is me in the Lisbon airport. Things weren't going well. Or not Lisbon? Nope, that was the really angry face. Okay, that's Portugal. Lisbon, Portugal, and then this image is actually in Rome when I was in Italy, because it took them 45 minutes to figure out how to open the plane door to let me out. Which, that's one of those things you just expect people that are flying a plane to know. So that was an interesting part of the trip. And the next image is, yay, I'm in Cairo, awesome. But they've lost my luggage, and they can't tell me where it is. And they're telling me, miss, you're being emotional. You're being a very emotional woman. You need to calm down. I have 3 outfits for 30 days, dude. Do not tell me to calm down. And I'm wearing one of the outfits at the moment. I don't speak Arabic, and everyone who's coming up to me is delightfully, wonderfully not speaking English. My phone's not working. The shuttle for the bus to my hotel is not there. And anytime I ask for help from somebody, they go, oh, we're sorry, we're eating. The entire airport is eating right now? Are you kidding me? Like, seriously? Well, ignorant American, they had just ended their Ramadan fast for the day, so everyone was eating. A very nice woman named Marianne, who is a Christian, I found out later because Marianne apparently is a Christian name in the area, saw me, and I just finished praying, like, God, please send me somebody my age who's a female who, for the love of God, speaks English, because I can't do this, and I'm freaking out. And it's like 30 seconds later, this woman walks up, and she goes, excuse me, you look a bit upset. Can I help you? You think? Yeah, I look a little, I'm like sobbing on the Cairo parking lot, like it's fine. And she like got me back to my hotel, the hotel that didn't have any light bulbs and no AC and no working outlets. But I got to the office eventually. Grace of God, I got there. Our team, I met at the Anaphora, which was a organic gardening site. It was Gabby and Marette and Nicole, who were from California. Joe, who was from Texas, Mariam and Jen, who were both from New York, Moni, whose actual name was Monica, but she was from Australia, and we had another Monica from Austria, so got confusing real quick. So she was Moni for like the entire trip. Marielle and Myrna and Karim were all from Virginia. I was from Maine. And then we had Rosie, Lulu, and Sue, who are all from Australia. And Hub, our coordinator, was a local. We'd like run into his family all the time. And he'd be like, this is my mom. And I'm like, Hub, I know. I met her yesterday. And the day before that. And the day before that. I know you're really excited to show me your mom. But trust me, I may not know Arabic, but I understand a little bit. We had, so like on the bottom, you see those are all the girls from our trip, and on the top one, it's actually us on the 4th of July. We even got the girl from Austria and all of the Australian people to wear like USA stickers. It's hilarious. They actually were more patriotic about it than we were. The other teams, because we were at Dar Abu Hanis, was Matai, Malfalut, and Tima, and those three were actually medical sites. So they were teaching basic things like you need to brush your teeth, deodorant. If you have lice, like don't share hats, here's how to get rid of it. Just like really basic stuff that the kids can implement themselves and will actually change their families in the long run. The next image is actually the church from the Anaphora, the organic gardening place with all of the monks and nuns, which is just about as cool and as hipster as you probably are thinking. And it was funny because they started prayer at 4 o'clock in the morning. Because everyone wants to get up at 4 in the morning when you go to bed at 1 in the morning. And so we get there, and it's packed. Like, the church is packed. They probably had 300 people. Because this that you're seeing in the image, that's not even all of the people. They had people waiting outside to come in, and they go, oh, we're so sorry that our church is so empty today. You must think that we're awful Christians. And I'm like, dude, you should see our 8:30 service. Just saying. Like, and that's 8:30. The service actually went until 10 o'clock. See, 4 in the morning to 10 o'clock. It's all in Arabic. The guy's like swinging this thing with incense in it and like throwing oil at us. It was interesting. It was interesting. From somebody who didn't even go to a Catholic church growing up, it was interesting. And one of the guys actually came up to me and he hands me the scarf. And I'm like, okay. Thank you. Like, I don't know what you expect me to do with this dude. And So he's like staring at me, and Fanny's like hands it, opens it up, and like, turn around. I'm like, okay. Like, I'm turning around. He tied it on me, and then he goes, yes, and walks off. I'm like, okay, understood, wear a head scarf. Okay, got it. Because they actually separate. Boys sit on one side, girls sit on the other side, and all of the girls will wear a covering over their head. It was a very interesting experience. And it was very holy, like very reverent. Like, there was a kid that started crying, and everyone would just like turn around, and they're like staring at the kid, and the kid's like, like, I'm done, I'm sorry. It's very interesting. The next image, that's where I was staying, and the pictures don't do it justice. It was stunning. I've never been any place that was more beautiful. It's Dera Abu Henes, and it's the monastery of St. John the Short. And when they say short, he didn't just have a complex, he was like a midget. That's like really, really, really short. And they actually told him he couldn't be a monk, and he was like, of course I can be a monk. I can do anything that you can do because God strengthens me, which is awesome. And so they actually gave him a stick, told him to plant it in the ground and water it every day. And if anything happened, to come back. And they're like, your faith will prove whether or not you can be a monk. He came back with a stick and it's like flowering and there's like leaves and stuff. And he's like, it's only been 10 years, but I did it. So he became a monk, and he actually started this monastery 1,500 years ago. And it's still there. Like, the church is still there. The next image, the image there on the left-hand side, the steeple, is like all, most of what's above the sand at this point, but you can actually go down steps down into the old church. And it's crazy. It's like so stunning. And they have all the old original artwork from like 1,500 years ago, which, how often you get to see that? It was amazing. And then on the right-hand side is actually the monastery we were staying, and they remodeled it. And they're like, so great, we just finished it, and it's actually made for AC. And I'm thinking, oh, awesome, cool. They're like, we just have fans, though. I'm like, oh, okay, like, sure, it's 117 degrees out, but yeah, fans, that'll help. And well, no, because it's actually made like really airtight for air conditioning, because they don't want to waste all of the electricity. So 117 degrees outside felt like a snowstorm compared to the inside of that building. So I actually slept upstairs on the roof a couple times, which wasn't allowed when they found out they put a gate up. But for a couple nights, I had wonderful sleep. It was great, because it was only like 90 degrees on the roof. So wonderful. So you can do the next one. The guy on the left is Abuna Yosef, and I was utterly convinced that the man hated me for the longest time, because he'd just look at me and just stare. And that's unnerving, especially when you don't speak the language, to be like, hey, dude, did I do something wrong? Like, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, the white kid has no idea what's going on right now. And I was the only non-Egyptian, so white person. I was the only non-Coptic person. I was the only person who didn't speak Arabic in the trip of 60-some-odd people. So I felt a little out there. But he was actually really great, and he told me when we were leaving through an interpreter, I was staring at you, and I looked so angry because I was angry at myself because I haven't bothered to learn English. And if I had bothered to learn English, I could have talked to you, and I'm so disappointed in myself because all I wanted to do on this trip is talk to you. And it's very humbling. Like, it's very humbling. He actually gave me a present. It's like a really ornate cross, and he's like, I'm giving this to you. And he's addressing like all of us, and he's like, I'm giving this to Serena, because out of all of you, she's the only non-Coptic person. She's been the most Coptic person here because she's been reading her Bible all the time, and she's been doing her morning prayers, and she's been attending Mass, and you all should be ashamed of yourselves. I was like, thanks, dude. I have a 7-hour car ride with these people after this. But they were really gracious about it. They're like, well, she's only been really good Coptic because we were teaching her. He tried to convert me a couple times. We had a conversation at one point where he was like, I accidentally asked a theological question, which I learned really quick. Don't do that unless you want a very long answer. And so it's 10:30 at night, and I'm like, oh, like, by the way, blah, 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 blah. Just curious. And an hour and a half later, he's like, well, that's just an introduction, but did you need more than that? I'm like, no, I am good. That, perfect. Note to self, next time Google. And it was really nice of him, though, because we had to go through an interpreter, so it took forever. And after, he's like, oh, by the way, I'd really like you to be at morning prayers. Morning prayers start at 4 in the morning. It's after midnight. Not really feeling it, but okay, sure. If you really want me to be there, I guess I have to be there. And he's like, but you can't take communion because you're not Coptic. I'm like, okay, yeah, I know that. That's fine. And he's like, but we could change that. We have a baptism pool. It's like, okay, dude. It's telling my grandmother about it later on. And she's like, Serena, she's like, if you do that, we're having a very long talk when you get home. Like, okay, Graham, note to self. Don't tell my grandmother anything till I get back. The guy on the right is a Heb. He was our local coordinator. He's 25 years old. He's a local, and he was actually an Egyptologist. And he took the month off and volunteered to be with us from 6 o'clock in the morning until 1 o'clock in the morning every day for the entire month. And he was amazing. Like, he always, like, knew exactly what to say, and he always had our security at heart. He actually saved me in a couple situations. We owed him a lot. He was a really great guy. Next one. This is our transportation. This was one of the really classy ones because it had a bench, which is cool. And it was a cattle truck, but there weren't actually cattle in it at the time, so it was so roomy. It was wonderful. Next one. This is, I love this picture because I don't look like the only white person in it, which was nice. But it was interesting because, like, we'd go on roads and the truck would actually, like, tip like this. So we're like, everybody hold. Like, don't let go. It's funny. Next one. This is, I look really angry in this photo. I'm in the back because the Abuna had just slapped me upside the head. And I have no idea why, but he was laughing, so it couldn't have angered him that much. And turn out that that's, like, considered a sign of affection. It's called an effie. So I wrote on Facebook just a picture of him, and I go, now I can cross getting slapped by a priest off my to-do list. Bucket list. But it was he was actually really nice. He called one of the other girls on the trip. He called her every day after we visited and said, how is Miss Serena? How is she? Does she have any questions? Has she read Acts yet? Is she ready to convert yet? I'd love to baptize her. He was a character. He was definitely a character. And he kept calling and just being like, Serena, I love you. I love you. I'm like, yes, sir. Okay, I have to go. Oh, look at that. Signal's breaking. The next one. This is in front of the old church that we were at. The guy on the upper right-hand corner is actually the son of the local priest. His name is Yehanna. And Aheb is underneath him. And the girl underneath him is Yusi. Looks like I photoshopped her into it, but I swear she was there. And they were wonderful. Just adorable, adorable kids. This is when we fit 25 people in a 9-seater van. And the windows didn't open, and there was no AC, and it's 117 degrees outside. So I'm sure that you can understand without me going any further into that one. What are some of the things you struggled with? I get this a lot, especially because people know me. So they're like, oh, like, you must have struggled with a lot of stuff. Like, what was going on? So the one on the left, transportation. That was interesting. From somebody who, like, the first thing she does when she gets in the car is put her seatbelt in, being in the back of a cattle truck going down the highway at 90 miles an hour and there's no seatbelts and you're literally standing on the outside of the truck and holding on because there's nowhere inside the truck to hold on or to sit, it was interesting. It was very interesting, but fun in a kind of, we might die, at least we know Jesus kind of way. There was... On the way to Abu Henes, there was a car accident in front of us, and one of the guys got thrown out of the vehicle, and he died. And the medical team was with us, and they, like, tried to revive him. It was crazy. So, I mean, it happens. It happens. The photo on the right is we're, like, chilling outside because there is no water and no electricity. And when I asked why, they go, oh, it's because the Muslim turned it off. Okay, yeah, they're joking. Like, this is like how we blame Lewiston for everything here in Maine. Like, okay, well, no, they're not joking. The Muslims turn the water and the electricity off for kicks. I don't know why. I guess cow tipping hasn't quite made it over there. I'm not sure. They need more hobbies or something. But it was interesting, for sure. I think it's funny that Pokemon Go started, so I figured I'd make a joke. But anyway, we didn't get much sleep because you got to figure it's like blaringly hot inside. And until I pulled the white card and got a room on the first floor, because the priest was like, we want Serena to be happy. I'm like, let's move her and her roommates down to a cooler floor. It was awful. We were sleeping about 3 hours a night. And by the grace of God, I wasn't tired at all. And I sleep like 19 hours a night. Like, I sleep forever. So it was definitely a miracle. That's probably one of the most miraculous things on the entire trip was me not being tired. But everyone else was exhausted. They fell asleep everywhere. So I just took pictures of them all the time. The bottom picture is when Aheb accidentally left us at a monastery for 3 hours. Just like forgot we were there. So we just all slept. It was nice. Next one. And the bus. That was fun. I like the nose picking one. I thought that was funny. Next one. Or like when people would just fall asleep on their cots or falling asleep sitting up. The girl in the middle is asleep and she's sitting upright. She's just like, nope, I'm done, which was hilarious. I can't eat wheat or dairy or mango or kiwi or pineapple or hazelnuts or barley or rye. It was an interesting trip because they're fasting and that's like what they eat when they're fasting. So they kept trying to give me bread. And I'm like, well, I'm allergic to bread. And they're like, oh, okay. And the next day they try to give me bread again. I'm like, I told you yesterday, like bread makes me sick. And they go, today too? And they don't understand allergies. Like the priest kept trying to give me blessed bread and he's like, oh, this won't hurt you, it's blessed bread. And I'm like, I hate to break it to you, but science disagrees with you. Like I'd love to believe like God's not gonna, like he'll protect me or whatever, but I believed that the first 12 times he gave me the bread and it didn't help me. So he just kept breaking it off like smaller and smaller and smaller. And he'd laugh and laugh and hand it to me and he'd be like, eat it, eat it. I'm like, okay, dude. Do you want me to come back? I'm just saying. But anyway, it was funny. So like the next picture, you can actually see the fish with the eyeballs still in it, which was fun, considering I never even had fish before I went there. And then on the left is actually these coconut things that Abuna went out and bought me special because he's like, we need to feed the white girl. I lost 15 pounds the first week and a half. So they noticed. And they actually allowed me to break my fast. They went and got me eggs for every night because they were just giving us bread for supper, and then they went and got me chicken every couple days, and they would laugh when they saw like how quickly I would eat it because I was starving. And one of the Aheb brought me the eggs, and he goes, here, by my hand made. And everyone's laughing, and they're like, no, Aheb, it's handmade. I'm like, shut up, it's adorable. Like, don't tell him. But it was great, and the food was actually really amazing. I really actually wish I could have eaten more of it because it was cooked very well, even though it was fasting food. Next one. We would go on home visits, so we would go and visit children that were in the program, and we were supposed to only do like 2 to 3 a day, and it was more like 4 to 6 a day, which was interesting. We'd get home at like midnight to eat supper, so it was interesting. This family, it was me, Nicole, and Suher that went to go visit this family, and it was a woman that has 4 children, the youngest of which is like 2 years old, and she's deaf. She can't hear, she's mute, she can't speak. And she needs some kind of an implant to help her hear, and they don't have the money for it. And Shanuda, which was one of the kids that wasn't in the program, he was like 10. He's actually like either autistic or Down syndrome or something. And he was just so happy, just like, all the time. He's just like, again, we want to play again. And he can't go to school because his dad used to bring him to school on his motorcycle, and his father was killed in the fields. Like somebody came up and just killed him and then walked off. And so there's nobody to provide for this family anymore. And this woman is probably only a little bit older than I am. She's very, very, very young. They get married at like 12 or 13 over there. So for a woman, when her oldest child is 13, like it's really young. She's really young. And she's like, yeah. She's like, but we're so blessed. We're so blessed. I mean, look at that. You're here. How amazing is that? And it just blew me away. Like they were so thankful. And even the boy was like, I really want to go to school, but I'm really thankful I was able to go to school. And this is an autistic kid who can't really communicate, but he could communicate that. And it was very clear, like he meant it, 100% he meant it. Picture on the left, one of my kids was very sullen and like didn't talk much, couldn't figure out what was going on. We went on a home visit and found out that his aunt had been engaged to be married. And she was going to be marrying her first cousin, and the family didn't approve. So they cut it off. They're like, no, you're not marrying him. You're going to marry this other guy. So the first cousin was crazy or something and went into the field and killed the new fiancé. Her brother-in-law and brother, who was the father of my student, and the grandfather. So instantly, you have this whole family of widows that just can't, they can't provide for themselves. Like, they're ostracized in the community because, like, look at what happened to them. Like, God must be cursing them. So it made a lot of sense. Like, it cleared up a lot of questions that we had. But even them, like, all the kids are sitting there playing, and they're just like, we're so excited that you're here. Like, we're so happy that you're here. And isn't it great we all can live together? And we have a house. Look at this. We have two rooms. And I was like, what? Like, they didn't have running water. They didn't have electricity. They were sleeping on the floor, which was mud. And they were just like, we are so blessed. We have so much. And it changed my perspective about a lot of things. Boy in the middle was a kid that would sit in the back of the room, wouldn't talk, refused to talk, wouldn't participate at all. Went and visited his family on a Friday, and he was very embarrassed to have me there. It's like, I walk in, I'm like, Day, I know you! High five? And he's just looking at me like, oh, get the crazy American away from me, please. At the end of the visit, I was like, you know, like, can I get a handshake? And he's like, can I get a hug? So I went and gave him a hug, and the next Monday, he was there, like, quote unquote, with bells on. He was at the very front row in the very closest desk to me. And he actually kicked the girls that normally sit there out. He's like, no, this is my seat now. And anytime that I asked a question, he'd be like, oh, you miss me. And so I'd call on him and he's like, I don't know, but I wanted to talk to you. So cute, just the cutest kid ever. And then the girl on the right, that girl, she's not in my class. I don't know who this kid is, but she just followed me around and want pictures. And anytime I'd take a picture with her, all these other kids would crowd in and she'd just be like, I'm so angry in every picture. And it became like a running joke, like, where's the angry kid? And finally, this last picture, I was like, you know what? It's the last day. If she freaks out that I'm holding her, oh well. So I pick her up and I take a picture with her, and she actually smiled in the picture. Like, that's a big smile for her. And one of her relatives came up to me and she'd started crying, and I'm like, ah, crying kid, like, well, what did I do? Because I can't even ask her, because she speaks Arabic. And he goes, oh, nobody's ever hugged her before. And he's like, I've actually never seen her smile before. And she's like 3 or 4 years old. And he's like, yeah, we're so thankful that you're here, because otherwise we never would have seen this, which just blows my mind. I can't get my cousins to hug me if I pay them. Like, and this kid's just like, I want a hug. It was so cute. It was so cute. This is our classroom before we started. We fit 50 kids in there, which was interesting. Next picture is kids in the classroom. It was actually a really, really small day. There was a saint day that was going on, so most of the kids were at church. But we actually put up on the wall, we had them draw their superhero in their life. Like, who is your superhero? Is it your mom? Was it your dad? Is it a neighbor? Whatever. Who is your superhero? And then we had them list off ways that they could be a superhero in their community, which was actually really good. The lesson plan totally failed, but the kids liked it. So I was like, okay, well, I guess we're going to color today. We had a lot of problem kids. And I say that jokingly, like, they were absolutely problems, but I actually really liked the problem kids a lot. So these two, call them the artists. It's kind of hard to see, but the kid on the left took permanent ink marker and drew all over his face. And I was sitting right next to him and watched the whole thing, didn't even bother to say anything. Because at this point, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to pick my battles. And if he wants to, as long as he's coloring on his own face, I don't care. I just don't care. The kid on the right drew me that elephant, and he gives it to me, and he goes, this is so you remember me. And I was like, of course I'm going to remember you. And he's like, yeah, but what if you don't? And he's like, this is so you always remember me, because I'm never going to forget you. It's just so cute. And the AKA, stop bringing your tattoo gun into class, please. I'm walking around, and I look over, and this kid who's like 12 years old is tattooing his next door neighbor that's sitting next to him. You can't do that in class. Or you just, no, like, why do you even have a tattoo gun? You're 12. And he's like, oh, miss, you don't have any tattoos. I'm like, no, I don't. And he goes, well, sit right down. And I was like, no. Thank you for the offer of hepatitis C, but I'm good. I'm going to go home without any tattoos. I'm all set with that. Next one. These kids just, why are you here? Like, you're supposed to be in other classrooms. I don't even think you're from this village. Who are you? Like, just wandering around all the time. The girl on my right was amazing. Like, I had an awful day one day. She came up to me and she's like, I leaned down. I was like, yes, Mary, like, what do you need? And she goes, yeah, miss, I love you. And she gave me a big kiss on the cheek and a big hug. And it was one of those days where we've been just like screaming at the kids because they were awful. I actually told them, I was like, we came here and we didn't have to come here. We came here from a very long way away. And everyone told us you were stupid and you couldn't learn and you were going to be disrespectful and we were wasting our time. And we thought differently. And we came here because we love you. And you're proving them right now. So prove me right. And unbeknownst to me, the coordinator and Abuna were standing outside the door and heard the whole thing. And luckily, they thought it was great. If I'd done that here in America, I probably would have been fired. So that worked. Next one. Like, kids would just climb into the windows to get into class because we'd like lock the door. We'd push the benches up to the door and sit on the benches. And the kids would all get together and push the door to push the bench out of the way just so they could spend time with us. I don't like spending time with me that often, never mind like other people. This kid. We heard a lot of this on the last day, but he actually came up to me like the third day and said this, and he's like, Yamiss, thank you, Yamiss. We learn now, and we very thankful. I miss you. My heart, it cries. I'm like, why is your heart crying? And he's like, because you're going to go away. And I was like, well, we're going to be here for 3 weeks. And he's like, yeah, but you're going to go away. And I'm probably not going to see you again. And it was crazy. Like, that's just crazy for me. Like, I thought I was going to go there for 3 weeks, and I was going to fall in love with the kids, and the kids weren't going to care one way or the other. Most of the time, I felt like the girl that was teaching with me really connected much better with the kids because she speaks Arabic. And at the end, I was actually told that anytime I wasn't in the room, that the kids would be like, where's Miss Serena? Where's Miss Serena? And they were running around teaching other kids sign language because I was using sign language in the class. So Abuna comes up to me, and he goes, Shakran. And I'm like, dude, if you can learn sign language, you could totally learn English. Like, we can do this. These are just kids that I just love their smiles. The kid in the middle didn't smile a single day the entire time. And that's annoying when you're trying to teach and they're just like the entire time. And he actually, the last day I was taking pictures, I was like, do you want a picture of you? He's like, I'm gonna take a picture of him, and he smiled. And it was like the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen. Just seeing this kid that went from being this just angry, sullen, depressed, bitter kid to a kid that could smile on command, not even like I'm tricking him into smiling by like tickling him or something. Like, he just smiled because he was happy. And it meant a lot to me. It meant a lot. We're not supposed to have favorites, but that was my favorite moment. Just other kids. These kids aren't even in my class. I don't know who these kids are, but they were wonderful. Anytime I left the building, they're like, Miss! I was like, okay. There were things that happened. We went to Malawi, which was a local city. It's a Muslim and Christian community combined, much more Muslim though. And somebody was yelling at me in Arabic, which everyone in Egypt yells. It doesn't matter what's going on, what's happening, their emotions, their location, they're going to yell. That's apparently what Egyptians do. And so I'm just blocking them out because it's in Arabic and I have no idea what they're saying anyway. So I'm just like, oh, it's another situation where I'm clueless. And all of a sudden somebody grabs me and pulls on my arm and it was like a cartoon. 1 minute I'm like this and the next minute I'm fully horizontal. And I'm like, what is going on? And the girl that grabbed me was part of our group. And she's like, you need to come with me, like, right now. Like, come with me. Don't speak English. Shh. And so she pulls me away, and she yells out for Aheb to come over, our coordinator, and she tells him what the guy said. I still don't know what's going on. And he's like, we need to leave right now. Got everybody on the truck, and we left. And we get back to the room, and I'm like, what happened there? Like, and she's like, I can't tell you what they said, but we needed to get out of there immediately. And after that, anytime that I went into the city, we had to be like in a really tight-knit group, especially the second time we went into the city. We were like walking hand in hand, and somebody tried to grab us and pull us into the into an alleyway, because they've got the Muslim Brotherhood there, and you've got people with machine guns just walking down the street. ISIS flags are flying. Like, it's not a really safe place to be as a white Christian, especially as a white Christian female. It's not a safe place. So after that, like, Aheb was basically like holding on to me the entire time, like, come with me, like, no, we can't go there, like, you're with me. And also rampaging water buffalo. Might seem like a joke. We sang the VeggieTales, Everyone Wants a Water Buffalo song a lot, because they were everywhere, but they just run down the street. You're like walking down the street, all of a sudden there's a water buffalo just like charging at you, and I'm not a moron, so I just stand still and wait for it to go back. And the poor Texas kid, Joe, is just like, ah! And I'm like, don't do that. Like, you grew up in Texas, dude. How do you not know this? There's a lot of dangers to the locals. And when I asked them, like, what do you want from our church? They said, we want them to know about the martyrs. And so while we were there, I woke up, and one of the girls that was in my room was crying. And I was like, what's going on? She's like, they just killed an Abuna. They pulled him out of his room at the monastery, and they beheaded him in the street. And this was right across the river from where we were. And I was like, oh, that's so sad. And when we started talking to the locals, they're like, isn't it great? What? What are you talking about? Isn't it great? Like, are you crazy? Like, a guy just got killed. Like, was there a mistranslation? Like, is beheading, like, a good thing? Like, what's going on? And they're like, no, like, isn't it great? Because he must have been such a tremendous influence and must have been showing Jesus so much in order for them to kill him. Especially like that. I'm like, okay. Like, I'm picking up what you're putting down. Like, all right, I'm good. I got this. And then they're like, and isn't it wonderful? Such a blessing. His son just got ordained, so he can take his place now. And it just blew my mind. Like, your father gets killed by a guy with a machete in your neighborhood. I'm thinking, you move to another neighborhood. Like, not like, oh, cool. Let's be here for the next 20 years. And also, like, with the clergy, they've been burning and looting churches, and they live at the churches. They were actually burning local businesses and local homes because people were meeting in the homes. So they burned about 50 houses down in our area while we were there because they didn't want them to be able to meet. There's honor killings for people that convert. Their family will come, and they will kill them. Death and disease, because there's no water that's safe to drink. But then also, water and electricity, when that goes out, and there's no way to get water, and you're 3 miles away from the river, and it's 117 degrees, and you're elderly, or you're a child, or you're sick, that's a death sentence. You're gone. And also ignorance, like one of the kids mentioned to me that he thought it was something about like that the world was flat. Because I like showed him a picture of a globe, and he's like, what is that? I'm like, well, it's Earth. You know, Earth is like a ball. And he's like, no, it's not. It's flat. And I'm like, you don't know that the world is round? I guess I think I knew that in preschool. Like, just basic stuff for us. And it's not over there. Another kid was like, oh, does the sun not shine where you live? No, it shines. What are you talking about? And they're like, but miss, you're so white. You're white like the moon. One of the kids said that I could be my own flashlight, so I shouldn't be scared of the dark. And they actually called me Wonder Bread. The people I was with started calling me Wonder Bread, and one of the kids Googled it and then told all the other kids, so I was Miss Wonder Bread for a long time. Which is even more ironic considering the fact I can't eat bread. But so there's just like there's a lot of ignorance. Just the fact that she thought that the sun didn't shine because I was white. She's like, the sun shines here, and it's really hot, and I'm dark. And you're really white, so obviously the sun doesn't shine where you are. And I was like, okay, a little bit like that, but you're missing like the bigger picture here, miss. When they asked how to help, there was like four things. The biggest thing and the thing that the Coptic people that were on the ground said is, we want the church to be praying and we want them to be fasting. They said they wanted you to be praying and fasting for the Muslims, which that kind of blows my mind, because I was thinking, oh, like, of course we'll pray for you guys. And they're like, oh, no. Like, if you have time, okay. But if you don't have time, spend your time on the Muslims, because the Muslims are who we, like, really need Jesus, and we're so blessed. Like, we're blessed already. They also want people to be mindful about what's going on. Most of the times, it's not going to end up in the news. There was a church that was burned to the ground, and there was an image that was floating around Facebook of the people kneeling in the ashes to have their service. The only reason I got that on my Facebook is because I now have like 100 Egyptians on my Facebook. So many Egyptians. And so I saw that, and it's so encouraging for me to see that, and it's heartbreaking at the same time. Voice of the Martyrs is a great website if you want to look more into that. They actually have an app that will notify you when anything has recently happened, if there's any situations like kidnappings that they need to be prayed about actively, like right now. It's a great source. CopticOrphans.org, you can find out more information about their program and what they're doing so you can better pray. You can also donate specifically to Coptic Orphans, to just the broad program, or you can sponsor a child that's waiting. We have a lot that are waiting in our area. It's $50 a month, and it, like I said, it includes the home visits, the one-on-one, tutoring, food. A lot of times it involves like fixing shelters. Like, a lot of these people, their houses have literally fallen apart and they're just sitting in the rubble and that's their house. So it does a lot for the kids. Or you could join me on an upcoming Serve to Learn trip. Bring a lot of granola bars if you come, for yourself, but also for me. I'm hoping to go next summer, and I would love to be back there right now. I can't. But yes, I can't wait to go back. I have some stuff in the back. I have some images and some things that Abuna gave me, and I also have a full, a very, very full photo album and some loose photos. If you would like to take one of the loose photos or a couple of them to pray, please feel free to do that. If you know of anybody that would also like to pray, you can feel free to grab some for them. That's literally why I printed them off for that purpose. So please utilize them, and I'll be up back if you have any questions.